I want to continue talking about gender ideology, gender identity. And if you have an outline, I'm down on page 24. And I want to talk about what God thinks about transgenderism, because that's ultimately what we should be concerned with. What does God think about this? And if we can see what God thinks about it, that should tell us what we ought to think about it, because we ought to follow his thoughts, make his thoughts our thoughts. And the fact is that God hates transgenderism. I mean, God hates all sin. So you could, you know, if transgenderism is against the scripture, then God hates it just like he hates every other sin. But this sin is actually specifically singled out, and we are told that God hates it specifically. And this is we're found back in the book of Deuteronomy in chapter 22. There are three evil practices of transgender people that are forbidden in the Word of God. The first of which is cross-dressing. Deuteronomy 22 and verse 5. Deuteronomy 22:5 says, "The woman shall not wear that which pertaineth unto a man, neither shall a man put on a woman's garment, for all that do so are abomination unto the Lord thy God." So this idea of transgenderism and cross-dressing is not new. This commandment was given 3,500 years ago, 1,500 years before the New Testament was written, when Moses wrote. You had apparently people, probably influenced by the Canaanites and those wicked nations, that were cross-dressing, and the Lord gave them this commandment. Obviously, he wouldn't give them the commandment if it wasn't either something that was being done or something that there was a temptation to do, right? So this is, nothing is new here. But notice what it says there. It says, "For all that do so," that is, wear clothing of the opposite sex, "are abomination unto the Lord thy God." Abomination means the feeling or state of mind of combined disgust and hatred. Abhorrence, detestation, loathing. So God is disgusted by and he hates cross-dressing. He hates it when a man wears women's clothes or when a woman wears man's clothes. And this is an Old Testament law, but the principle of this law has not changed, as I will show you here in just a minute. So, just as a practical takeaway, make sure that the clothes that you wear match clearly your gender. We don't want to bend the rules. We don't want to get loose with this kind of thing. And it would pertain more to women than men. I don't see very many men walking around out there, unless you're talking about transgender people. But I'm talking about normal people. I don't see men out there walking around dressed as women typically. But there's a lot of women that blur the lines. I mean, I've seen plenty of women walking around in blue jeans, boots, with a tucked-in, button-down shirt and a big belt buckle or something. I mean, it basically looked like a man. There's no difference between that and a man, pretty much. So we just want to be careful about that and make sure that we are clearly wearing clothes that conform to our real gender. Now, the second evil practice, I just held up three fingers. I do that all the time. The second evil practice that transgenders do that God that is forbidden in the law of God, is men acting like women. Now, this would go beyond just dressing like women. This could be a man that dresses like a man, but he acts like a woman or talks like a woman. And this should not be. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 9. 1 Corinthians 6 and verse 9. Paul says, "Know ye not that the unrighteous shall not inherit the kingdom of God? Be not deceived. Neither fornicators, nor idolaters, nor adulterers, nor effeminate, nor abusers of themselves with mankind, nor thieves, nor covetous, nor drunkards, nor revilers, nor extortioners shall inherit the kingdom of God." Now he lists there effeminate and abusers of themselves with mankind. Abusers of themselves and mankind refer to sodomites. Effeminate refers to men that act like women. Effeminate, when speaking of persons, this is primary definition, that has become like a woman, womanish, unmanly, enervated, feeble, self-indulgent, voluptuous, unbecomingly delicate, or over-refined. Now, this is obviously in reference to a man, right? There's nothing wrong with acting like a woman if you're a woman, right? Women are supposed to act like women. Women are supposed to be womanish. They're supposed to be more feeble than men. I don't know if they're supposed to be self-indulgent, but they're supposed to be delicate, right, and over-refined. That's what a woman is. You know, there's nothing wrong with a woman not wanting to go out in the garage and get her hands all covered in grease and come back in a big mess, right? There's nothing wrong with a woman saying, I don't really want to do that, because that's not womanly. But a man saying, oh, I don't want to get my hands greasy, there's something wrong with that, right? You're acting like a woman. You're a little bit too delicate. So men are supposed to act like men. Women are supposed to act like women. And it is a sin for a man to act like a woman, for a man just to be a sissy, for a man to walk around and never want to get his hands dirty and is totally non-confrontational and just sweet and, you know, just weak. That is unmanly. That is effeminate. That's acting like a woman. And that is not to be. Let me give you another verse. Jeremiah 51 and verse 30. Jeremiah 51, 30. Now, most sodomites are effeminate, but not every effeminate man is a sodomite. Right? There are men that are not sodomites. They're happily married, they're heterosexual, they're normal as far as that goes, but they can be on the effeminate side. And men want to be careful about that, to not act like that. You don't ever want your actions to make people think, if they didn't know you, he's probably a sodomite. Because he talks with a lisp and he bends his wrist and he, you know, like all this kind of foolishness that sodomites do. If you act like that as a man and you speak like that, you don't ever want to give the wrong impression. Anyway, Jeremiah 31 and 51:30. Another verse, this is an Old Testament reference, that men should act like men, not like women. Jeremiah 51:30. It says, the mighty men of Babylon have forborne to fight. They have remained in their holds. Their might hath failed. They became as women. They have burned her dwelling places. Her bars are broken. So here's a mighty empire. And the military of the mighty empire, the mightiest empire in the world at this time, their men became as women and wouldn't fight. We're seeing that happen right now. The most powerful nation in the world, so we are, that's what people think anyway, and our military is woke. And if you didn't know this, if you haven't been paying attention, I'm not saying I'm not just throwing words out there. Our military is literally woke. The top brass are woke. The stuff that they put out to the media and their social media, the military pays for transgender surgeries now for its servicemen. Our military is flat out woke. It's pathetic. You see the promotional material the Russian military puts out and the promotional material ours put out. The Russians are like some big, bulky special forces guy that's, you know, storming the enemy and whatever. I mean, like a real military. Ours are like these little cartoons about transgender crap. I'm not even kidding you. I'm not making this stuff up. This is right here. This is our military. We're reading about it right now. Pathetic. Become as women. And furthermore, this verse tells me that women are not supposed to be in the military, especially in combat. And yet, we've had women in the military forever, and now we have women, women are allowed in frontline combat, which is totally wrong. It's wrong for them. It is just absolutely evil to put a woman in frontline combat. It's evil to do it to her. It's evil to do it to every man around her, because I'm not trying to be mean, but women are not as strong as men. Women can't operate like men. And what is that going to do to a frontline combat unit when you have women in it that can't keep up? And then you got to stop and carry them along? I mean, this is ridiculous. Not to mention, what does it do to morale when you see a woman get shot and lay there and suffer? It's bad enough to see a man get shot. Imagine what it would feel like to see a woman get shot and lay there and suffer. It's horrible. It's evil. It's not anti-woman to say women shouldn't be in the military in frontline combat. It's elevating women to say that women shouldn't be there. That is man's work, and that should be something that nobody wants to do anyway, that you only do if you have to. Anybody that likes sending other people's kids out to get killed in wars is an evil person. It's one thing if it's a defensive war and you have to fight, but anybody that wants to send other people's kids over to foreign lands to fight wars we shouldn't be involved in is wicked. And anybody that wants to do that to women, you talk about somebody that hates women. Right there's a woman hater that would send a woman to combat. The Bible also forbids women acting like men. Let's look at Isaiah 3 and verse 12. Isaiah 3 and verse 12. He says, "As for my people, children are their oppressors, and women rule over them. O my people, they which lead thee cause thee to err, and destroy the way of thy paths." The Lord was not commending them for this, right? This is a condemnation. Children are your oppressors. You say, well, boy, that's hard to believe. Have you ever gone to Walmart? You ever gone to the grocery store and you see children who are their parents' oppressors, throwing fits, getting whatever they want, right? This is typical, sadly, typical behavior these days where parents kowtow to everything their children want because they don't want to be embarrassed by them throwing a fit in public. Children are our oppressors. And women rule over them. This is not supposed to be. So right there from that verse, once again, I will become a target for those who hate people that say things like this. Women shouldn't be in politics. Women shouldn't be in positions of authority. Women shouldn't be governors and city councilmen and mayors and senators and congressmen and presidents. Women shouldn't be in these roles. Women are not supposed to be ruling over men. They're supposed to be at home. How's a woman supposed to be a keeper at home if she's in high office in Washington, D.C. or in Jefferson City or wherever? That's not what they're supposed to be doing. They're not supposed to be acting like men. Let men do men's work and let women do women's work. Now, in that the Bible teaches that men are not to act like women and women are told to act womanly, therefore it can be concluded that women are not supposed to act like men. Because somebody might say, well, you know, the Bible, the New Testament doesn't flat out say thou shalt not be butch. It doesn't have to. It says that effeminacy is a sin, which means that men can't act like women, and it tells women how to act like a woman. So, therefore, for a woman to act like a man is obviously forbidden in Scripture. God didn't have to specifically say it. Now, the third evil practice of transgender people that's condemned in Scripture is men having long hair and women having short hair. Now, sadly, this is not only a transgender practice. This is a practice that is violated by people all over the place of both sexes, has been for a long time. 1 Corinthians 11, 13 through 15. This sermon, I guarantee you, will not win me any friends. Just so far, the first 10 minutes of it, I probably offended about three-quarters of the population. 1 Corinthians 11, 13 through 15. But I wouldn't be a true minister of Jesus Christ if I didn't. It's my job to offend people when I preach this, what the Scripture says. You know, if you get offended by that, well, then you can go talk to God about it. 1 Corinthians 11, 15, 13 through 15. Judge in yourselves, Paul says. Is it comely that a woman pray unto God uncovered? Doth not even nature itself teach you that if a man... If a man have long hair, it is a shame unto him. But if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. Now, people read the first half of this chapter in 1 Corinthians 11, And they talk about it, you know, it talks about a woman praying or prophesying uncovered, and if she's not covered, let her be shaven or shorn and all this. And people get, they're all confused, and they think that, oh, maybe the Mennonites are right. Maybe women have to wear an artificial head covering or something, and men shouldn't pray with a hat on. You ever wonder where that tradition comes from? Men shouldn't pray with a hat on. It's fine. You want to take your hat off to pray. It's fine, right? It's not wrong to do that. But almost all Christians and non-Christians, it's so funny. Non-Christians, probably about the only commandment that non-Christian men keep in the Bible is to take their hat off when somebody prays. And it's not even a commandment in the Bible. So the only commandment they think they're keeping in the Bible is one that's not even there. So that's why. I guarantee you that's why men take their hat off to pray, because of a misunderstanding of this verse. But if men have to take their hat off to pray, you know what they have to do? They have to give it to their wives, and their wives have to put on the hat to pray. Because women are supposed to be covered when they pray, and men are supposed to be uncovered. So if men have to take off their hats, you need to take it off and put it on your wife's head before you both pray. Okay? Nobody does that, do they? This verse is talking about hair. Hair is the covering. It says there in verse 15, but if a woman have long hair, it is a glory to her, for her hair is given her for a covering. That's what she's supposed to be covered with. That's what her head's supposed to be covered with. We've been over this before. Men are supposed to have short hair. If a man has long hair, it's a shame unto him. What's long and short? Well, the head is not to be covered. So men's hair ought to stay within the hairline, basically. Don't cover your ears, don't cover your neck, don't cover your face, don't cover anything, right? Just keep it nice and short within the hairline. Women ought to have hair long enough to cover their head, which tells me, like, chin-length hair, right? If you got chin-length hair, then if you look at you from the side, you look at it from the back, you can't really see your head if your hair is down. If you pull it up in a ponytail or something, that'd be different. But if your hair is down and it's chin-length, then your head, your whole head is covered, right? I think that's the easiest way to look at it, I think, and the way that you can be totally clear and you're not going to be in trouble with God. But, of course, transgender people, transgender men, and when I say transgender men, I actually mean men, that, you know, I'm not using it the way that the weirdos use it. These men that are transgender, I guarantee you they all have long hair, right, to try to look like a woman. You know, they know what a woman's supposed to look like. A lot of women don't know what a woman's supposed to look like, but transgender men know what a woman's supposed to look like. That's why they grow their hair long. And transgender women know what a man's supposed to look like. That's because they bush their hair off, right? They know what men and women are supposed to look like. As for the rest of the population, a lot of them are confused about what men and women are supposed to look like. It's pretty sad when you got to take your cues from transgender people to figure out how long your hair should be. So, a takeaway point is, if you're not transgender, don't wear your hair like one. Right? We want to make sure that we are not causing confusion, because that is one of the ways that God intends for there to be a difference between the looks of men and the looks of women, is hair length. That's a major way. Sometimes there are people out there, and it's just the way that God's made people, there are some women that, you know, they may have some masculine facial features. And if that woman had short hair with the type of facial features she has, you might look at her and be like, what is she? You can't really tell sometimes. But if that woman at least has nice long hair, then it's pretty obvious, right? You can tell. So God wants there to be a distinction here. Have you ever been walking, following some person, some man, and you think he's a woman because he has long hair, and maybe he's not a big guy, maybe he's fairly short, and he's got long hair, and from the back, you think it's a woman until you find out otherwise, right? That causes confusion, doesn't it? Men with long hair and women with short hair cause confusion, and God is not the author of confusion. 1 Corinthians 14 and verse 33. 1 Corinthians 14:33, for God is not the author of confusion, but of peace, as in all churches of the saints. This is referring to people speaking in tongues all at the same time and so on. That's the context. But the point is, God is not the author of confusion, period. All right, now let's switch gears here a little bit. And I want to talk about affirmative therapy. Okay, This thing here, affirmative therapy, is one of the major drivers, and one of the most destructive things in this whole transgender movement is this thing. If you take away this aspect of it, a lot of this stuff would go away. And a lot of the kids that get wrapped up in this stuff and end up destroying their lives never would if it wasn't for this evil practice. This is the idea that you affirm children in their ideas. If the boy thinks he's a girl, then he knows best, right? I mean, who are we to argue with a 6-year-old? Who are we to argue with an 11-year-old? Obviously, if the 11-year-old boy knows he's a girl, who are you to tell him he's not? Right? You need to affirm him in this, because it's mean to correct. It's loving to affirm, don't you know? Well, affirming foolish, childish tendencies rather than lovingly correcting them is evil. And I will make my case for this as I go through this. The problem with children is that foolishness is bound in their hearts. Proverbs 22 and verse 15. We were all like this. And to an extent, I mean, foolishness is still bound in our hearts, right? Our parents are supposed to drive it out of us when we're young, but, you know, every one of us still has plenty of foolishness that's bound up in our heart. And that's why God's given us preachers and he's given us his Bible to correct us and tell us, you know, the way we should go. But this is a major job of parents. It says in Proverbs 22 and verse 15, foolishness is bound in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction shall drive it far from him. It's bound up in there. So why would you take a child who has foolishness bound in his heart and then just take his word or her word for whatever he or she thinks, even if it's about him or herself? Why would you take the word of a child who has foolishness bound in his heart or her heart? See, sometimes young children and adolescents become confused about their sexuality or gender. And this happens. This has been happening prior to this transgender craze. As far as I know, this has been happening for probably forever, right? That sometimes little kids, they get confused about their gender or sexuality. They don't understand everything. A little boy wants to be a little girl or wishes he was a little girl. A little girl wants to be a little boy. I think that's fairly common. There have been little girls that were tomboys that wished they were boys probably forever because the boys get to go and rough and tumble and play or whatever, you know, and the girls are like, I wish I could do that, you know. And so that is not uncommon for that to happen. Some boys have tendencies toward being effeminate. And I've seen this. You've probably seen this too. You've probably seen little boys that have tendencies to act effeminate. And that's a parent's job to steer them away from that. I've even seen little boys just the way that they sit or the way that their mannerisms. And I remember seeing a little boy do this one time and a church member said, why are you doing that? Stop that. Like, stop sitting like that. You know, because he was sitting like in an effeminate way. And that was good for that church member. Don't do that. Don't sit like that. Because you don't want to allow children to do that. Once you start forming habits, then, you know, you can get kooky stuff in your head. I'm kind of getting ahead of myself a little bit. Some girls have tendencies toward being masculine or tomboys. My mom told me when she was a little girl, she was a tomboy. She wanted to be a boy. My mom told me that. When she was little, she wanted to be a boy. She wished she was a boy. I don't think that's uncommon. What would have happened to my mother if she would have grown up in the 2020s, and as a little girl, she was a little tomboy and she wanted to be a boy? What would have happened to her if her parents didn't have sense enough to just say, just to let it go, let time pass, encourage her to be a girl, right? What if her parents would have said, well, I mean, I saw on TV and I hear in the public schools that if my little girl thinks she's a boy or wants to be a boy, then she must be. And then they take her to a gender therapist and put her on puberty blockers and hormones, and guess what? I'd never be around because they'd have destroyed my mother's life, probably taken out her ovaries or whatever, and given her a double mastectomy. And then guess what? No Chad Wagner. What would you do? You wouldn't even have a preacher right now. Imagine that. Well, you'd have a different one. Maybe you're thinking, well, maybe that wouldn't have been such a bad idea. I don't know. Now, such children should never be told that they are or might be the opposite gender of their biological sex. This is just crazy, but this is what people do. You get a little child that thinks he should be a girl, or a little girl that thinks she should be a boy, and the parents then are encouraged to tell the child that, well, I mean, if you think you're a girl, then you are, or you might be, right? This is insane behavior, but this is happening all over the place. It's happening in public schools. It's happening in medical clinics. I've got quotes for you. These children should be lovingly encouraged to act like the gender/sex that God made them. Right now, you wouldn't want to be mean to a little child. You wouldn't want to demean or degrade that little child, but you would want to just gently steer him or her in the direction of acting like the gender that you are, right? You don't ever encourage it or affirm foolish ideas. Some children experience what's called gender dysphoria when they're young, and they think that they're the opposite gender. Such children, as I've said, need their parents to be patient with them and let them grow out of it while teaching them the truth concerning gender. So I've never been there. I wouldn't know personally, but I can imagine if that happened to me, I wouldn't get overly afraid. I wouldn't try to take drastic measures, especially if it's a little child. Just let time pass. Just explain to him that, no, you're a boy or you're a girl, and just direct them in that. Read them, tell them, show them the Bible, show them how God made them male and female. Teach them, you know, in a way that a little child can understand. And just don't worry about it. And keep them away from psychologists. Keep them away from idiot counselors at school and whatever. If you just keep them away from all that stuff and keep them off the internet, they'll be fine, more than likely. I have a quote here from Abigail Schreier in her book, Irreversible Damage. I will be quoting from this extensively in the next couple of weeks. She says, but it is not true that gender dysphoria, or, quote, being trans, unquote, is similarly immutable. She was talking about something else prior to this that was immutable, meaning that it can't be changed. She's saying that gender dysphoria, or being trans, so-called, is not something that can't be changed. We know this because before, quote, affirmation therapy, unquote, was the vogue, gender therapists practiced, quote, watchful waiting, unquote, a therapeutic process whose goal was to help a child grow more comfortable in his or her biological sex. As we'll see in the next chapter, watchful waiting was remarkably successful. Several studies indicate that nearly 70% of kids who experience childhood gender dysphoria are not affirmed or socially transitioned eventually grow out of it. So back before the lunatics took over, back before the inmates were running the asylum, therapists and psychologists did watchful waiting, which is what any normal person would do until they came up with all this nonsense. They just waited. Can you imagine if every tendency your child had or everything your child wanted to do, you just said, well, that's what he wants to do, right? That's what we're going to do. Imagine if he said that he, you know, little Johnny wants to be an astronaut when he grows up, and he tells you this at 6 years old, and you say, all right, we're going to get you enrolled in astronaut school, wherever, right now. We're going to get you in an astronaut program in elementary school or whatever. I mean, this is a stupid example, but, you know, just every little whim that some kid has, you're just going to go with it and run? Of course not. You're going to say, that's nice, Johnny. Yep, maybe you can be an astronaut someday, and you know what? You're just going to forget about it, and so is he, right? More than likely, right? That's what you do with children when they come up with, you know, kind of wild ideas. You just let them go with it, steer them in the right direction gently, and just wait, and then they get over it and get on to the next thing. And this is what people used to do, psychologists and, so-called professionals. And as Ms. Schreier said, it was very effective. Now, affirming a child's delusional idea that he or she is the opposite sex is child abuse. You want to talk about child abuse. There couldn't be too many forms that are worse than affirming that a child is the opposite sex and then taking steps to turn him into the other sex, or her into the other sex. You couldn't get much worse. I mean, I can think of some horrible things you could do to children that would be maybe equally as bad, but you're not going to get too many things that would be worse than affirming them and then taking steps to change their gender. That is straight up child abuse. Insane, idiotic psychiatrists and therapists instruct parents to follow and affirm their confused and emotionally unstable children in their gender transition journey rather than leading them back to reality. I'll give you some examples here from Schreier's book. This is from page 104. She says, to support and affirm their child's journey, Dr. Kaufman, this woman is a lunatic, by the way, as you'll see, Dr. Kaufman told me parents must, quote, believe what their child says, while also understanding both that it may or may not change over time, and that part of that journey means staying in step with their child each step of the way and seeing where it goes. This woman belongs in an insane asylum. So you just follow your child. Wherever the child goes, just see where it goes. It may change, it may not. But you know what? Whatever the child says, do it. How stupid is this? Do we act like this? I say we. I mean, do people act like this in any other situation? When you say, hey, Billy, what would you like for breakfast? Ice cream. Well, the child has spoken. He knows what he wants. He obviously knows what is best for him. Ice cream it is for breakfast. Billy, what do you want for lunch? Ice cream. Billy has spoken. Right? I mean, Billy, what do you want to do today? Well, I want to just go play. Well, maybe we should have some school time. No, I want to play. Billy has spoken. Billy knows what's best for him. Let's go play. Right? I mean, do we act like this? Do parents act like this in any other situation? Assuming that the child is right, whatever the child wants? It's insane. The most prestigious, and I put that in quotes, prestigious, what a joke. The most prestigious medical accrediting organizations have shown themselves to be completely corrupt and devoid of competence, medical knowledge, and plain common sense by endorsing gender-affirming care. And they all do it. The big ones. The American Medical Association and so on. All of the big organizations that give their top-down orders to the whole medical establishment, the whole mainstream medical establishment, these people are desperately wicked and corrupt. Is it any wonder that everybody's following suit with this stuff? Because it's coming from the top down. Here's another quote from Schreier's book. This is on page 98. The new affirmative care standard of mental health professionals is a different matter entirely. It surpasses sympathy and leaps straight to demanding that mental health professionals adopt their patients' beliefs of being in the, quote, wrong body, unquote. Affirmation therapy compels therapists to endorse a falsehood, not that a teenage girl feels more comfortable presenting as a boy, but that she actually is a boy. Right? They are taught to affirm this. Not affirming your feelings, but affirming the fact that you are a boy because you think you are. This is not a subtle distinction. And it isn't just a matter of humoring a patient. The whole course of appropriate treatment hinges on whether doctors view the patient as a biological girl suffering mental distress or a boy in a girl's body. But the affirmation care standard, which chooses between these diagnoses before the patient is even examined, and that's what they do, and she'll give you an example of a doctor that just will flat out tell you, I'll recommend you for gender transition surgery. It doesn't matter. If you tell me you need it, you got it, before they even examine them. This has been adopted by nearly every medical accrediting organization, the American Medical Association, the American College of Physicians, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American Psychological Association, and the Pediatric Endocrine Society have all endorsed gender-affirming care as the standard for treating patients who self-identify as transgender or self-diagnosed as gender dysphoric. So pretty much if you go to any doctor's office, any psychologist, anybody, anywhere in this country, Maybe the individual doesn't buy into this stuff yet, but the accrediting agency that this individual is accredited with, every doctor, every psychologist, every psychiatrist, every therapist, this is what they're taught, every one of them. So anywhere you take your child, you better be very careful, because there are wicked, evil people in all these places, and the people at the top are pushing it down to all of them. You better be very careful, because you never know what kind of a lunatic you're going to find in these offices. Ms. Schreier continues on page 99. She says, imagine if we treated anorexics this way. Imagine a girl, 5'6" tall, 95 pounds, approaches her therapist and says, quote, I just know I'm fat. Please call me fatty. Imagine the APA encouraged its doctors to, quote, modify their understanding, unquote, of what constitutes, quote, fat, unquote, to include this emaciated girl. Imagine the APA encouraged therapists to respond to such patients, quote, if you feel fat, then you are. I support your lived experience. Okay, fatty? Imagine that. But it's the exact same thing. Can you imagine what you'd think about a therapist that did that to your anorexic daughter? You'd think this person is a lunatic. He's a wicked, or she's a wicked person. But they do that to these kids that think they're transgender, think they're in the wrong body. Call them by the name they want to be called. It's crazy. You see, the Bible teaches that wrong ideas are to be corrected, not embraced. Let's look at Hebrews 12 and verse 9. This is why God has given children parents who are adults, who are supposed to have some sense, right? I mean, that's the whole idea, right? You're given older people that know some things, and they're supposed to correct you and steer you in the right direction. And this culture that we have now says that we ought to put the kids in the driver's seat. Hebrews 12 and verse 9. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Shall not we much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? Paul here is using this as an example of how God chastens his children, just like a father chastens his children. It was just a given in Paul's day that fathers corrected their children, right? This is just, everybody knows this. That's why he uses it as an example to teach us about how God corrects his children. But not anymore. If you're a father and you correct your child, especially when it comes to gender ideology or something like that, you are in big trouble with the culture, and you could eventually. I mean, there have been cases in which your children will be taken from you. Now, I don't know. I mean, it's on a state-by-state basis. And I know in Canada, I saw a poor guy in Canada. His daughter thought she was a boy and wanted to transition, and he opposed this. And, the state came down and put a restraining order against him. He couldn't even talk to his own daughter, couldn't even be around her. It's horrible. And if people don't stand up against this, that's the direction we're heading in. The scriptures are given to correct us when we err. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 16. That's why I'm doing this series, to correct this errant way of thinking. 2 Timothy 3:16. A lot of the dumb dog preachers out there, especially in these liberal denominations, which they're not real preachers and they're not real churches, but still, they're fulfilling the function of what people think are preachers. And a lot of these people, they're right on the tranny bandwagon. They're going right along with it. They'll even have services. I've seen it. I've seen online where they'll have services where a little girl or a little boy will come out as trans and they'll celebrate this in the church. It's ridiculous. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 16. All scripture is given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness, that the man of God may be perfect, truly furnished unto all good works. Reproof, correction, instruction. Look at that. I mean, those three things, that's the majority of what the Bible's given for. It's to correct. To reprove is to show somebody where they're wrong and tell them that they need to get right. Correction, Same idea. Instruction, teaching somebody what they ought to do. That's what the scripture's here for. That's what preachers are supposed to do. That's what parents are supposed to do when they train up their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Let's look at Ephesians 6 and verse 4. This is a parent's duty. See, these lunatics want parents to think that it's their duty to just stand by and watch and see what happens and encourage their children in whatever pursuits they want. And the Bible teaches you ought to correct them and tell them where they're wrong and lead them in the right direction. Ephesians 6 and verse 4, "And ye fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord." Admonition is the action of admonishing, authoritative counsel, warning, implied reproof. To admonish is to put a person in mind of duties, to counsel against wrong practices, to give authoritative or warning advice, to exhort, to warn. That's what parents and specifically fathers are supposed to do. They're supposed to counsel against wrong practices. They're supposed to put their children in mind of duty, showing them what they're supposed to do, giving them warning and advice. But see, they've castrated parents by teaching them these lies and telling them that if you do this, you're going to harm your child. Instead of telling them that if you do what we tell you to, you're going to destroy your child, they're telling them if you don't do what we tell you to, you're going to destroy your child. It's completely backwards. Therefore, fathers should admonish their children against wrong ideas or practices, not affirm them in it. You never affirm anybody in a sinful decision, child or not. It is not loving to affirm somebody in something that is wrong. Right? I mean, shouldn't everybody know this? Thou shalt not hate thy brother in thine heart. Thou shalt reprove thy neighbor and rebuke thy neighbor and not suffer sin upon him. It says back in the book of Leviticus. Children need to be told when they're thinking incorrect and illogical thoughts, because they're children and they haven't learned. Their brains haven't developed. Their prefrontal cortex hasn't developed. I think for men, it's not until you're in your early 20s. That's why teenage boys make such boneheaded decisions. That's why insurance companies charge more to insure a teenage boy than a teenage girl, because teenage boys are idiots, right? Parents have to instruct them. That's the same with girls. Parents need to direct them. Tell them when they're thinking or saying things that are illogical, that don't make sense. It's a parent's job to bring up children in the way that they should go, not allow them to go in the self-destructive ways of this insane world. Proverbs 22 and verse 6. And honestly, this is probably the single most important thing you can do to make sure that your kid doesn't get swept up in this trans movement is just to be a biblical parent, like I've been teaching you for as long as I've been teaching, and what you've heard long before I was here. Just be a biblical parent. Train up your children in the way in which they should go. Teach them the scriptures. And when you do that and keep them off the internet, chances are they're going to be fine. But if you don't do that, then who knows? Proverbs 22 and verse 6. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Train him up in the way he should go, not the way he wants to go. A lot of parents, their idea of child training is, I mean, basically making sure they don't run out and get hit by a car or something, you know, totally crazy. But other than that, pretty much just let them do whatever they want and let them figure it out on their own. And you know, they'll turn out all right. I think that's most people these days. That's their idea. Oh, they'll turn out all right. Well, maybe they will. Some people get lucky, but maybe they won't. You never know. In her book, Irreversible Damage, as I've been talking about already, Abigail Schreier explains the importance of parents setting limits on their children's behavior, even when it comes to children, even when it causes children to get angry about it. And I'm just going to read this to you. I mean, this is pretty much common sense, but I thought there was some insight in it. And I like when people of this world say things like this. It's good to read it from people of this world. This woman, I don't think she's any kind of a Christian, as far as I can tell. She's not even opposed to transgenderism in adults. And in her book, when she interviews a transgender person who is an adult, she will refer to that person by his or her new name and by the new pronouns, right? And I went through, if you read my copy of the book, in those spots, it took me a little while, I crossed out every single pronoun and wrote the right one in there when she was interviewing these people, because I cannot handle reading somebody using his or him referring to a woman. No way. So anyway, I had to correct her book for her. And she's not opposed to the LGBT movement. She's, I think, probably just a kind of a left liberal that still has some sense. I don't think she's not really much of a conservative, but she's right. I mean, what she's saying in this book is right. And that's one of the reasons why I think the book is powerful. It's not written by a fundamentalist Christian. People can't dismiss her as just some kind of a fundy, right? She is on their side on most things, and yet she's calling out this transgender thing. Anyway, she says here, Sasha Ayad says that parents today are often afraid of upsetting their teens because they have the idea that their job is to ensure their child is, quote, happy and perfectly adjusted and well-balanced 100% of the time. Did you know that that's your job as parents, to make sure your children are happy 100% of the time? Oh, if your children ever get mad at you, you are a big failure. Let me tell you what. Yeah, right. If your children are never mad at you, you are doing something wrong. I guarantee you that. Your children should be mad at you from time to time, because you should be telling them no. Not only is that an unreasonable goal, it misunderstands the inherently tumultuous state of adolescence. Teenagers are supposed to get angry and emotional. Parents are supposed to set limits. If you have a fight with your teenager, she might be angry with you, but she'll feel the presence of a guardrail. Sometimes just knowing it's there may be enough. Your teenager may tell you she hates you, and she may even believe it. But on a deeper level, some of her need for individuation and rebellion may be satisfied. If you eliminate all conflict through endless agreement and support, it may encourage her to kick things up a notch. And I thought that that was pretty insightful, because that does make sense. Sometimes, even though children would say otherwise, they want to know where the line is. They want there to be boundaries, because if there are boundaries, they know their parents care about them, right? Even though they hate it and they want to be able to do more things than they're allowed to do, but deep down, I think on a subconscious level, they know when their parent says no, the parent actually cares about them, right? And if the parent never says no, like this lady's saying, it would make sense that the child might just keep pushing and keep pushing just to see, where will you finally tell me no? I think children have some children, and it's natural in all of us, have a desire to be rebellious. And it's almost like they're going to push to the point where you say no and they can be rebellious a little bit. And then they felt like they rebelled, right? And then what she's saying is, maybe that's enough. Maybe they'll feel like, okay, I stood up to my parents and I got mad and I don't like them. And now they kind of got that out of their system. Whereas if you never say no, they're just going to keep pushing until they finally get somewhere where you say no. That's what this lady's idea is. I think it kind of made sense. Now let's talk about the big lie that the big liars tell parents. And this is one of the things that probably fuels this whole movement and mitigates any parental resistance to it, is this big lie. And that lie is that if you don't affirm your child's idea that he or she is the opposite gender, the child will commit suicide. That's what these people say. Psychiatrists, psychologists, that's what they'll tell you. In her book, Irreversible Damage, she talked about this. Abigail Schreier did. This is from page 81. At the gender clinic, Catherine joined a group of parents whose adolescent children had come forward with similar epiphanies. That is, that they're trans, so they think. The gender therapist assured Catherine that using Maddie's new male name and male pronouns was entirely reversible. So Maddie is Catherine's daughter. Maddie thinks she's a boy. Maddie wants to be called a boy's name and wants to use male pronouns. And the therapist told her, hey, this is perfectly good. You know, it could change. Don't worry about it. Just do it and see what happens. There seemed no good reason not to affirm. And his verdict was resolute. Quote, he said that my daughter was at high risk of suicide if I didn't affirm. He said that parental affirmation is the key. That's the most powerful way to prevent her possible suicide. So that, of course, brought chills to me. Obviously, if a therapist tells you that, and he's the expert, right? He's the one that knows. And he says, if you don't affirm, your child could very well kill herself. What's the average parent that doesn't know anything? What's the average parent to do? I mean, he's the expert after all. I don't want my child to kill him or herself, so I must affirm. Quote, I continue here with the quote. Quote, in researching the theory and practice of gender affirmative therapy, I spoke with a number of psychotherapists specializing in gender issues, including some who are transgender themselves. More than one told me that it was not their job to question an adolescent patient's stated gender identity, but instead to facilitate the patient's range of options. One therapist's website, I discovered, promises he will never serve as a, quote, gatekeeper, unquote, between patients and their gender hormones or surgeries. He guarantees the same-day first consultation letter of fitness for gender medical interventions. Another informed me that if I wanted to know anything about gender affirmation therapy, I needed to speak to Randy Kaufman. So this is what I was referring to a minute ago. Here is a therapist who, if you come to him and say that I think I'm in the wrong body, he will just write you out the script. Go ahead and start taking these hormones. Go ahead and get the surgery, whatever. He's not going to stand in anybody's way. So she's told to talk to Randy Kaufman, who is a complete lunatic. She continues. So what does Randy Kaufman believe transgender-identified teenagers need from their parents and therapists? Quote, well, this is Randy speaking, which I believe is a woman. It's spelled with an I. I believe she's a woman, if I remember right. Maybe she doesn't even know what she is. It's hard to tell with this woman. But quote, well, what I would say is that there are certain things that transgender or non-binary adolescents really need for good mental health. And I'd say the single most important factor is to start with family support and acceptance, Dr. Kaufman said. There are studies that show that adolescent children who are supported by their family, the suicide rate drops dramatically and mental health increases, and that gets borne out over time. Of course, what she's saying is true if they're properly supported, if they're supported in their transgenderism. I don't believe that at all, and I'll give you the quotes to show you that that's not the case. But yeah, family support is crucial. She's right. Supporting them to do the right thing. Anyway, let's continue with what Ms. Schreier said. Suicide rates are often cited by gender therapists as a reason to immediately affirm a child or adolescent's stated gender identity, and sometimes even as a reason to allow them to medically transition. Now, Last Sunday, I told you that if you pay attention, you will find people using the plural pronouns they and them, referring to individuals. Now, I got some looks like I had two heads, like I'm crazy. Did you just read what Ms. Schreier wrote there? Let's read it again. Suicide rates are often cited by gender therapists as a reason to immediately affirm a child or adolescence, that's the singular, a child, a adolescence, the apostrophe is before the S, not after, the singular, immediately affirm a child or adolescent's stated gender identity and sometimes even as a reason to allow them to medically transition. She just used them to refer to a child or a adolescence. See? Of course, she didn't do it on purpose. This is what I'm telling you. People do this all the time. Start paying attention, and I'll point out some more here in a minute. You will find people using they and them to refer to individuals constantly, in speech and in writing. Anyway, let me continue. Of course, the very prospect that their child might self-harm would bring all but the coldest parents to their knees. If adopting her new name and pronouns and buying her new opposite sex clothing is what it takes to keep her alive, most parents would leap aboard the gender train. According to gender-affirming therapists, this is not only advisable, it is the bare minimum required for parental support. So, yeah, of course. Most parents, if you tell them, if you don't do this, your child is going to commit suicide, most parents would do just about anything, right? I mean, the last thing you'd ever want your child to do would be to commit suicide. So they tell these people, hey, if you don't affirm your son who thinks he's a girl, and if you don't start calling him by a girl's name and calling him her and she, or if you don't affirm your son who thinks he's a girl and start calling him, I don't know, anyway, you get it. If you don't affirm either one who thinks they're the opposite sex, I was trying to give you examples of both and I might have just repeated myself. But anyway, if you don't do that, they're going to commit suicide. That's what they tell them. So, of course, the parents go along with it. Then Schreier continues on page 107. Quote, now this is Dr. Kaufman again. I tell them that we can't change the mind. Listen to this. Listen to this. I tell them that we can't change the mind, and so we have to change the body, Dr. Kaufman said. Can you imagine? This woman did an extensive study of this topic and talked to people, and they said, talk to Dr. Kaufman. Like, Dr. Kaufman is the go-to person when it comes to gender ideology stuff, okay? This is not some fringe lunatic on YouTube or something. This is like the go-to person. And this is what she says. We can't change the mind, so we have to change the body. As if nobody ever changes their mind about things, like, throughout their life. We can't change the mind. What if a guy who was 6 foot tall was convinced that he was 5 foot six? Absolutely convinced. And he says, I'm 5 foot six. I know I'm 5 foot six. Don't tell me I'm 6 foot tall. I'm 5 foot six. And you say, we can't change the mind, so let's chop off 6 inches of your legs. And think about it. I mean, these people are certifiably insane. That's sort of the nutshell. This is Kaufman continuing. That's sort of the nutshell. She's the nutshell. I would let them know that if someone identifies this way, someone, singular, it's pretty rare that they would change their mind. You see, there it is again. Someone, some individual, that they, plural, see, I'm not making this stuff up. We have known that we can't socialize someone into or out of a gender. In this way, this is Schreier writing again, in this way, being transgender is like being gay, Dr. Kaufman explained to me. We know you can't convert someone out of being gay. Quote, this is Kaufman again. So I would tell these parents, we can't convert someone, individual, to being cisgender. Remember, cisgender is normal. You identify as the gender that you actually are, right? They are who they are. See, there's the plural they again. And your choice is to learn to accept this and support your child, or if you don't, what I see coming in the future is the child is going to be very mentally unhealthy and unhappy and will likely, if they're not already, become depressed, anxious, not functioning well, not being able to get on with life, not do well in school, not have friends, may be suicidal, may try to commit suicide, may be self-harming, may kill themselves. That's what you can expect. Is it any wonder that parents go along with this stuff? If that's what you're told by the experts? Abigail continues, it's a gun to the head. Do as your kid says, or she might take her own life. Again and again, I heard this question from gender therapists and also from parents to whom they had spoken. Would you rather a dead daughter or a live son? Think about that. Would you rather a dead daughter or a live son? Let your daughter transition and she'll live. You'll have a son now, but at least he'll be alive, right? Evil. The sad thing is the opposite is the truth. Children who are transgender have a much higher suicide rate than normal children. I quote again from Schreier on page 117 and 118. Better put my glasses on for this one. The rates of anxiety, depression, self-harm, and suicidal ideation for transgender youth, adolescents, and even adults are indeed startlingly high. Nearly every study confirms this. In 2014, the Williams Institute put out a widely cited study that reported the suicide attempts among transgender and non-conforming adults at 41%. 41% suicide rate among transgender adults. That is crazy high. Now, she'll talk about this and show how it's probably not actually that high, but still, 41%. And these people tell us if you don't allow them to transition, they'll commit suicide. The statistics are saying if you do allow them to transition, almost half of them will commit suicide. Think about that. If true, this would be a ghastly statistic. For the U.S. population as a whole, the rate of attempted suicide is 0.6%. So among the population, among non-sodomites, and I'll explain why I just said that, 0.6% of people try to take their own life, right? Less than one, like one half of 1%, basically. And 10 to 20% for lesbian, gay, and bisexual individuals. See, the gay life is not gay. It's not happy because 10 to 20% of them attempt to take their own lives. Very sad. There are a few problems with the study, however. One is that it is entirely based on self-report. As a writer at Fourth Wave Now, a consortium of parents who oppose medical transition for young people pointed out in an excellent blog post, quote, "More careful and rigorous studies always follow up with in-person interviews, and when self-harming behaviors not intended to end life are controlled for, the actual suicide rate is typically halved, meaning the suicide attempt rate could be as low as 20%. That's still horrible. That's one-fifth of transgender adults attempt suicide. Think about that. And these liars are going to tell you that if you don't allow your child to transition, he or she might commit suicide, when the truth is that he or she has a very high rate chance of suicide if you allow the transition. That is still horrifyingly high, Schreier says. And there are other studies that seem to corroborate a very high rate of suicidal ideation and self-harm from transgender-identified kids. It's fair to assume that this is a deeply troubled population and that it is suffering acutely. In order to justify the peculiar mandate that therapists immediately accept patients' self-diagnosis when presented with someone claiming In order to justify the peculiar mandate that therapists immediately accept patients' self-diagnosis when presented with someone claiming gender dysphoria, we must answer two questions. One, is the gender dysphoria causing the suicidal ideation? And two, do we have any evidence that affirmation ameliorates mental health problems? The answer to both questions, it seems, is no. It's not the gender dysphoria that's causing suicidal ideation. It's these kids are messed up. I mean, they got a lot of psychological problems already. The gender dysphoria is just one of them. And that's not what's causing the suicidal ideation. The suicidal ideation is more likely once they do go through with it, not just have the dysphoria, but actually go through the process of taking the drugs and getting the surgeries and those kind of things. In a recent academic study, Kenneth Zucker found that the mental health outcomes for adolescents with gender dysphoria were very similar to those with the same mental health issues who did not have gender dysphoria. In other words, we have no proof that the gender dysphoria was responsible for suicidal ideation or tendency to self-harm. It may have been the many other mental health problems that gender dysphoric adolescents so often bear. Still, even if the gender dysphoria were not responsible for the suicidal ideation, it might be worth, quote, affirming, unquote, these youths if doing so would cure their depression and lift their suicidal fantasies. Unfortunately, the proponents of affirmation therapy, there is no evidence that this is the case. There are a few important studies on point, though none is definitive here since the current craze is so new. One is a long-term study of adult transsexuals, the term in use at the time, showing a rise in suicidality after sex reassignment surgery. Another, more relevant to today's gender-crazed girls, comes from a leaked 2019 report from the Tavistock and Portman Trust Gender Clinic in the UK, which showed that rates of self-harm and suicidality do not decrease even after puberty suppression for adolescent natal girls. The report was so damning that the governor of the clinic, Dr. Marcus Evans, resigned. He told the press that he feared the clinic was fast-tracking youth to transition to no good effect and, in some cases, to their harm. So there is an honest person out there in some of these practices, thankfully. Let me take a look and see. Okay, I'm just going to stop there. I didn't get, again, nearly as far. I have a few more pages I wanted to get through, but that's all right. We'll pick it up next time and talk about how mutilating children is evil, according to the scriptures, if you didn't already know that.
Just a quick note at the end of the sermon. The most important thing a believer in Jesus Christ can do is to be a member of one of God's true churches. If you're not already a member of one, go to pastorwagner.com/churches to see if there is a true church or other believers of like faith near you. That's pastorwagner.com/churches.